Committee on Transportation. It's Friday, May 1st, 1987. We are meeting at Hearing Room B at 8 a.m. We're having a work session on House Bills 2775 and 2755.
Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. Let's see. I hate it when we have bills that have all the same numbers, but they're just in a different order. 2775. We will have a work session on House Bill 2775. This is the bill that Representative Menace, did you want to?
He wants us to pass his bill.
Yeah, well, no, did you want to say something? Were you here last time? I didn't think so. Do you want to say something now?
If you don't mind.
That's fine.
Good morning. Should pass.
We had a question about your bill, whether you could it could be done anyhow, and we found that it can't.
Right.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons, Madam Chair, that I'm here.
Come join us and put your name on the record, please.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Representative John Menace from District 20, Portland, Oregon. One of the reasons the bill was introduced was because the law specifically addresses the location of the temporary permit or trip permit that motor vehicles issues and says that it has to be in the front left corner window. And originally, when this idea was conceived, was to simply move that small registration back to the back left window so that law enforcement officers who were looking at cars that had expired registration plates or expired plates could verify that, in fact, they had a temporary or a trip permit in the back window. And as I testified in the House Transportation Committee, one of the things that happens in the Portland metropolitan area because of the DEQ problem, cars are required to pass the DEQ, there are oftentimes cars that are being operated on the street with trip permits as opposed to having plates that have current registrations and tags. Police officers will often stop cars and then subsequently find out that they do have a valid trip permit. And it's been my experience that you'll occasionally find yourself in a verbal conflict with someone over the justification or reason why you've stopped them, trying to explain to them that you couldn't see the temporary registration because of the angle of the window and the way that the dashboard is constructed, where it's located. I, back in December, went to Florida and observed that Florida, and I don't know whether you have the temporaries from Florida that we had in the House Transportation Committee or not, but Florida has a large paper kind of a plate that looks like a regular license plate, although it says in large letters, temporary. And it's a place where the date can be written in, and it's in large letters, and it's placed in the back left window. Well, it just seemed incredibly sensible to me that Oregon could do something like that and would help alleviate some of the problems with, you know, inappropriate stops by police officers or stops that maybe are unnecessary and would prevent police officers from having to subsequently be embroiled in some dispute over justification, reason for stopping a car and this kind of thing. So there's a twofold reason. The state of Washington also uses the temporary registration permits in the back left window, although they're just a little bit smaller. And I think as the language of the bill was changed, it was talked about in committee that Oregon would begin to do just that, to elevate or raise the size of their permits so that you can easily read them, as they would do this by rule. And in addition to that, we had investigated how many of these temporary permits does the state of Oregon have permitted or printed up, how much would it cost to change over to a larger size, and essentially what it amounted to is they only have a year's worth of these temporary registrations or trip permits printed in a year. So in essence, by allowing them to do it by rule, they would be able to deplete current stocks, and in the process of doing that, they could go through having the new forms designed and then subsequently reprinted. And frankly, I think it's not a real complex bill, but it's one that's pretty simple and could help alleviate some problems, I think. Any questions? I'd be glad to answer them.
Madam Chair, John, occasionally don't you look for an excuse to stop a car?
Devin, you want truth or convincing lie? In the law enforcement community, generally we feel that we can, if you really look, you can find justification to stop any car. But frankly, I think from a prudent point of view, you know, it's my opinion that law enforcement officers need to be as professional as possible. So
I would concur in that opinion. I think most of them are.
We don't need to find pretext, stop, you know, justification reasons. Frankly, I think it would help the officers on the street from making stops that are unnecessary.
I agree. I'm sure you can find another excuse if you really look hard enough.
Madam Chair, if I could, there was one other issue that came up with respect to this, and that was we have a statute that deals with obstruction of the rear window. And the question is, does this change, putting this temporary back in the lower left corner, violate that statute when we have two conflicting statutes? And the information that was given to me, and I don't know whether, Madam Chair, you have that or not.
We have a copy of the letter from Motor Vehicles Division.
All right, I'm not familiar with that. I have a copy of an Attorney General's opinion that was issued by Jim Redden some years ago.
Okay.
Relevant to this, back in 1979, relevant to the same statutes.
I also asked legislative counsel to come in because I have a sort of a legislative counsel type question.
All right, fine.
So maybe if she could come join you.
Sure, that would be fine.
Joan, could you join Representative Minnis? I have here's where we are. We have the bill that's requiring the placement of a trip permit in the left rear window. And we had a couple of questions about, to begin with, last time we had a question that said, couldn't Motor Vehicles Division require this by a rule anyhow? Now I have a letter from them saying they can't do it by rule because 815.220 says you can't put material in the rear window of a vehicle that would impair your ability to see out. Now, of course, that statute also says that you can't put it in the front window. So, I have a couple of questions.
Madam Chair, do you have copies of the Attorney General's opinion?
No, I don't have copies of the Attorney General's.
It's my understanding that the House Transportation Committee was going to give you copies of that because that Attorney General opinion addresses that specific issue, and it was relevant to the ORS
483.452,
which was the statutory number
prior to the change.
And Let me look at this briefly, and I'll read you the highlights. Essentially, what he's saying is that you can put one or two or three stickers in a window without violating the law, and that the statute is kind of unclear, in essence, that it would depend on the intent of the individual whether they're trying to obscure the view into the car, because the statute addresses whether or not a law enforcement officer can look into a car. Let me look at this real quick, and I'll see if I can highlight
related to glass of some sort?
Well, it also, the glazing materials that people put on their windows. Now, it's interesting because if that glazing material is factory installed, then it's lawful under Oregon statute. However, if you...
That's because it's the kind that's installed that meets the federal requirement.
Well, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. See, the statute originally was drafted to deal with the safety of law enforcement officers as they're approaching cars on traffic stops. And it dealt with the officer's ability to look into the car. But the statute was drafted very broadly because what it said was that if you have a car that has this glazing material or whatever that is installed by the factory, in other words, the factory equipment, then it's legal under the statute. But if you take your car that didn't originally have that as original equipment and then subsequently put glazing material on it, then it's illegal because it's in addition, wasn't factory equipment. And then it talked about obscuring your view with stickers and so on.
Yeah, I remember working on that problem in 79 and 81 and 83 over and over.
Yeah.
No, 79, we had another one.
Those desert scenes in the back window of your pickup trucks.
So I guess my question is, does 803, I guess I have a couple of questions. Does 803, which requires the trip permits, provide an exception to 815.220?
Which, the 220 being the obstructing?
Let me tell you what I'm looking at. This permit is going to be part of 803, 600, 615, or 625. It's going to be part of 803, and it's going to be issued under those. And I've got those in front of me, but it's hard to listen and read them at the same time.
Madam Chair, if I understand your question, you're asking, is there a specific exception for this permit to accept it from 815-220?
Yes. See, I've been told by Motor Vehicles Division that they need the bill because without the bill, if they say that the permit has to be in the left rear window, then, but just by rule, then there's a conflict with 815-220, which says talks about obstruction of vehicle windows and provides a penalty.
Madam Chair, I would say that Motor Vehicles Division's interpretation is incorrect, and I'd be glad to offer copies of this Attorney General's opinion. If you want, I can read portions of this, although it's a little long. I can read what he said, if you don't mind.
Just a little bit. Okay.
Okay, this is the discussion. It says, the basic purpose of this statute was presumably to discourage tourists from cluttering their windows with souvenir stickers, impairing driving visibility so as to create a hazard. It seems quite clear that the statute did not reach other obstructions to a driver's vision, such as curtains. The Oregon legislature amended ORS 483.452 by Oregon Laws 1979, Chapter 709, to read, no person shall drive any vehicle upon a highway with any sign, poster, one-way glass, adhesive, film, glaze, application, or other materials upon the front windshield, side wings, side windows, or on either side forward or adjacent to the operator's seat, or rear windows if the material prohibits or impairs the ability to see in or out of the motor vehicle. And then sub B, nothing in this section prohibits safety glazing materials of the type approved under ORS 483.466, and then sub 2. Every windshield on a motor vehicle shall be equipped with a device for cleaning rain, moisture, windshield wipers, so on and so forth. Sub 3, a person who violates this is a Class C traffic infraction. It goes on to say that the change was apparently intended to reach the one-way reflective film which owners of many vehicles apply to reduce glare and heat for decorative purposes and to improve privacy within the vehicle. We suppose that it is possible for such one-way films to obstruct a driver's vision in certain light conditions, but understand the primary goal of prohibiting application of such materials was to improve safety of law enforcement officers approaching a vehicle. But other changes are instructive. The previous language applied to all windows. It is now legal to place stickers on side windows behind the front seat, even to the extent of completely obscuring them. The previous language applied to any opaque material placed upon a window. The present language prohibits application of material, or opaque or not, which prohibits or impairs the ability to see into or out of the motor vehicle. It accordingly seems to be lawful to place a few or several stickers on the windshield, rear window, or front side window, so long as the stickers do not impair visibility into or out of the vehicle. The exception for stickers required by law is eliminated, presumably on grounds that one temporary license certificate or snow parking tag would not impair visibility into or out. But a real enforcement problem is possible. If one sticker is permissible, how about two? And it goes on to argue that, you know, you could continue that on to the point that it completely obscures a window. It may be prudent to add some kind of a specific language in this statute that accepts this temporary permit from the application of ORS 815.220, just to clarify the issue. But according to this Attorney General's opinion, it's obscure. I mean, the whole issue is clouded.
I'm waving at Motor Vehicles Division so that he can come forward also.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill Seeley with the Motor Vehicles Division. Just
okay.
To clarify that point in our letter, the another portion of that opinion also asks how big is too big. And as we were reviewing whether we could accomplish this by rule or not, and we did have conversations with our legal counsel on this. We didn't know how big was too big either. And we have the same information that our existing permit at this size is probably okay, but even the opinion uses words like probably and seems to be. We were afraid to tell this committee that we could accomplish this by rule, and not be able to do so. There's enough of a doubt there, and our letter expresses those doubts, not emphatically.
It also raises the question of the penalty.
Yes, and that was of, Madam Chair, of maybe even greater concern to us. Only permits issued under 803625 could we enforce a penalty if improper placement was done, since the rules are tied into the infraction of 803635. The other statutes that we'd be issuing permits under 803600 and 615, although we have the rule authority there to require placement, we would not be able to specify penalties, so that someone who chose not to do that, there could be no cause to cite.
Joan, have you listened enough to understand what my concerns are, or do you need to ask me a question about explaining myself?
No, I think I understand your concerns. Mr. Seeley is correct that...
Name for the tape.
Oh, sorry, Joan Robinson, Legislative Council's office. It's possible that they couldn't do it by rule, that they couldn't require these permits to be placed there
and
because of the
conflict.
And have a penalty
if they weren't.
Right. The penalty issue I haven't looked into, but presumably, yeah, that it's even more difficult for them to create penalties by rule than to do other things by rule. But the legislature can do it by statute. And if, to the extent that the two statutes conflict, that 2775 conflicts with 815-220, 2775 would be held by a court to be more specific and later passed and therefore controlling. Representative Minnis is also correct that it's easy enough to make it clear that the provisions of 2775 are an exception to 815-220 if there is any doubt.
Okay.
And the Attorney General's opinion is, as they've told you, a little ambiguous. It does allow this, I think. I agree with Representative Minnis. I also agree with Bill that it does raise the question of how big is too big or not big enough or whatever. So it would be easy enough to clarify it.
Okay, well, why don't we, I feel satisfied that we do need to have the bill to, and to clarify that. And I assume that the rest of the committee does after listening to this discussion.
Madam Chair, I would move that we amend the bill in concept to, in Joan's opinion, eliminate any potential conflict between the two chapters and make this one supersede the existing law.
Okay. And Senator Simmons has moved that, and I want to sort of clarify that motion too. I'd like to make sure that it is clear that they can do that there can be a penalty, and that the penalty is the Class B traffic infraction that is the weight of infractions for improperly using the temporary permit, which is what the bill says.
Well, that would be in line 27.
Yeah. Is there any objection to that motion? Hey, Joan, now that we've passed that, you should tell us. You'll probably do something notwithstanding 815-220 or something like that.
Either that, or I would make a new subsection 4 in 815-220 and put the exception there. I just have to look at it and see which one turns out to be easier. But it would be either right in the new section 2 of the bill or in 815-220.
Okay. Well, do that in concept, and we can send...
move the bill to pass as
send
amended.
Send House Bill 2775 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor of the Senate. Is there further discussion on this bill?
Before we really finish the subject, I'd like to ask Representative Minnis or maybe Lieutenant Stevenson if there is any enforcement of 815-220 with respect to the glazing of the rear window, particularly so that vision is not inhibited. Sort of irks me. It's bad enough to be driving behind panels. And
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, I could only speak from my experience as a Portland police officer and working traffic division. I think the state police policy is a little bit different. Within Portland itself, I would say there's very little enforcement of those statutes. And unfortunately, perhaps that may be one of the the justifications for some traffic stops, but I would say that there are very few citations issued by law enforcement agencies there, with the exception of the state police, since their orientation is a little bit different.
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, for the record, Lieutenant James Stevenson, State Police. I don't know the exact numbers. I know there is enforcement of it by our agency. If you'd like, I can get the exact numbers and get
it. No, I'm not as interested in the numbers as I am in the fact that I think it's a hazard to drivers behind these cars. It's bad enough to drive behind a panel or a truck where you can't see ahead, but when there's really no need for the back window being obscured in a passenger car, it's a hazard. Also, along the same line, is there any enforcement of the opaque material obscuring license plates? We did that last session, I think.
Did we ever do it?
Well, I think
we worked
did.
On it forever.
No, I think it was part of the revision. And
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, with respect to that, yes, there is, particularly in the Portland metropolitan area, because obviously, if a law enforcement officer is following a car in much of these materials, you cannot even read the plate. And I've actually confiscated the materials or forced them to take the materials off.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, that's any color obscures the color of the plate or changes the color of the plate, and that's in itself is a
bad thing. And blue lights on trucks are my nerve. Senators.
Is that the same policy? That
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, yes, that's correct.
Well, I'm glad that we did something that's helping to make license plates more legible, even if we don't start painting pictures all over them so that they're legible again.
Are there any further questions on House Bill 2775? Not. Gwen, please call the roll. Thank you, Joan.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Aye.
Senator
Ewell? Aye.
Senator
Simmons?
Aye.
Aye. So whose turn is it? Brockman?
Well, of the people who are here.
He's not here.
Of the people who are here.
If they're not here.
Can we give it to them anyway?
I can assign it to whoever I want to assign it to. I'm not going to, you know, be mean about things, but whose turn, who has carried the fewest bills so far?
Senator Brockman and Senator Senator Frye, but besides Senator Frye, Senator Brockman and Senator Kintai.
Well, let me assign it to Senator Brockman because Senator Kintai, I know, has a bill on the floor today, and we will ask him to carry it. I don't think he'll have a problem. He was here during the other discussion.
We'll have Bill Seeley help us.
Okay. Okay. Now, the next bill is...
You're kidding. Do we have it here when we fill each bill?
Okay, the next bill is 2755 that we had great discussions with.
And I have amendments and information.
Questions of whether...
Oh, you have it.
It's... Oh. How if someone was charged... And it's automatically goes on the record. And then if the charge was dismissed, what might be done? Now, Carol, why don't you talk to me about this bill?
Well, what had transpired is the committee had asked that I work with Representative Ekus and the counsel for the Governor's Commission on DUII to try and find something, as well as motor vehicles, that was acceptable to everyone. And these amendments come the closest to doing that. What you also have is...
What do you mean, come the closest?
In terms of having everyone agree. This is something that everyone agreed to.
Okay. They said that the bill with that amendment
was agreeable to them. That's exactly right.
Okay.
What transpired is that if you look at the example of information that was prepared by motor vehicles, this gives you an example of what the existing driving record looks like
right.
in certain circumstances.
And that is, it says prepared for S Transportation Committee 43087LJB.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And what this does is this allows you to see exactly what the driving record looks like under certain circumstances now.
what this bill, as amended with the 2755A-3 amendments, would do would require that in addition to this existing information, that there be a notation that the individual was acquitted. The assumption that exists now is that if your license was suspended, it shows the conviction. And if the conviction...
I mean, that's what this language says at the first example.
Exactly. However...
The conviction is license was suspended because they blew .08.
Exactly.
Okay.
However, in this moment, there is also the disposition of the court case, which would be convicted.
So if
however,
they wanted to protest that...
But what transpires now is that if it doesn't say convicted, it's assumed that they were acquitted or it was dismissed. However, what this bill would do would allow people to be able to have a driving record that says acquitted. But the reason that there had been some concern about doing it in the first place was if it doesn't say convicted, then it is either in a state of being pending or they were acquitted or dismissed. I mean, one of those things would have to occur. It does require a certain assumption, and this would take away some of those assumptions. But it is possible by looking at the record to make an assumption about being acquitted or dismissed if it were not pending. And that was the concern that the Governor's Commission had, as well as motor vehicles had, that it was possible to kind of get that information by looking at the record. But Representative Ekus's contention was if it provided some satisfaction that their driving record said acquitted, if they went through the process, that that might be a positive thing to do. And those are the issues before the committee.
Madam Chair, they could avoid that confusion and doubt by just not driving under the influence in the first place.
Well, Madam Chair?
Senator Monroe.
Of these, we've got four examples here on this little sheet.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what they're telling me.
And the only one that appears to be applicable is example three.
The other ones aren't applicable?
Well, because they were convicted. And the others. Or one in one they went to diversion, and the other two they were convicted.
Okay, so the only one that really applies is on page...
Example three.
Because do you have this piece of paper in front of you?
I've just given it.
Okay.
And it appears to me that on this example three, if that's what we're going by, you got the person was arrested, was asked to take the breath test, failed the breath test, and then you say status of driving under the influence citation is not known, but no conviction for the offense has been received. So from that, you assume that they either dropped the charges or something. The person was not, anyway, it's clear they were not convicted.
Senator Dukes, I'm sorry, Senator Monroe made a remark, and Carol, you were going to respond to that, and Senator Dukes.
Well, the problem is that sometimes the record will reflect months at a time no status because often they are pending for a very long period of time. That is part of the problem that presents itself, and Tony may want to speak to that, is that when it is pending, there is nothing that's there that could eventually become a conviction because what they're finding is with the backlogs, there can often be a record that would have no notation except for the mandatory suspension under implied consent that would not allow you to know the status of the case. And that could often be 6, 7, 8, 9. They may be able to speak to the length of time, but sometimes a very long period of time.
Okay. Yeah, I see where the date on this is February 1 of this year, so that's probably the case. That probably, if it's going to the court, it hasn't got there yet.
Right.
Senator Dukes.
Yeah, I was going to say essentially the same thing. This doesn't show that the case was dismissed or right. The person was found not guilty or whatever. It simply tells you that
something's happened.
Something
yet.
Happened or hasn't happened yet. And if indeed the person was acquitted, and if this makes a difference to an insurance company, then I could see it could be a real hassle. I mean, you make your application and they say, I'm sorry, you know, we're going to raise your rates or we're not going to cover you, and then you have to go through all the paperwork. And it seems like a fairly simple, benign step to ease that up.
Okay. Representative Vegas, I understand that you all work together and that the amendments that we have would change the language on line 13. And so what that would do would say that the division would make a notation that the person wasn't convicted if